There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it
home. Good morning, and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again. My guest today, Anthony Barone Kolenc, has many skills to share. He is a law professor, podcaster, speaker, and author of award-winning fiction and nonfiction. He is the author of The Harwood Mysteries, an award-winning medieval historical fiction series for youth. He hosts an ecumenical radio show and podcast titled The Shepherd's Pie that focuses on youth issues. Tony also writes short stories for and contributes a regular column to Practical Homeschooling Magazine. Tony retired as a lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Air Force Judge Advocate General's Corps, or JAG, after 21 years of military service, where he litigated civil and criminal cases before trial and appellate courts. He also taught at the Air Force Academy. Good morning, Tony. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning, Patty. Thank you for having me today.
It's a pleasure to have you today, Tony. And the very first thing I want to say to you is thank you so much for your service in the Air Force. My sister and brother-in-law both did 20 years in the Air Force, and my husband was an Air Force veteran. So the Air Force is kind of close to my heart.
Wonderful, and thank you for your family service. Hey, maybe I served with some of them. Who knows? Although I retired in 2012, so they might have been before my time.
Oh, they retired way back in 93, yeah. It's been quite a while for them. Well, as we just mentioned, Tony, you did serve in the Air Force for 21 years. You are now a law professor, you're an author, and you're a podcaster. Would you share with us what childhood experiences influenced those career choices?
You know, my grandmother, I come from an Italian family. I could still hear my little Italian grandmother going, "You're going to be a little lawyer," because I always used to argue with everybody, it seemed. So I think I must have been born to be an attorney at some point. But, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed writing. For some reason, I liked the idea of being a lawyer. I'm not really sure why, if it was watching Perry Mason or something. I'm not really sure what it was. But although I thought about several different things, and I wound up joining the Air Force when I was 20, and I was married. I had two kids. This was actually just as the first Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm, was starting in 1990. And we partly did it because there was a big patriotic fervor going through the country at that time. And we partly did it because I needed some direction in my life. And I thought, you know, well, the military might be giving me some of that direction. So that's what I did. And the Air Force took great care of me. They actually sent me to law school eventually after I served about 6 years. And then I spent the rest of my career being a lawyer in the Air Force. And that was a beautiful thing. Thank you, taxpayers, I always like to say, since I went to law school on the taxpayer's dime.
That sounds exciting, Tony. Tell us, what type of nonfiction do you write?
Well, like I said, I'm a lawyer, so I've had to write a lot of legal law journal articles. I like to write actually about the First Amendment and especially the freedom of religion. I also, as a homeschooling family, you know, we were homeschoolers for many years. I like to write about legal issues involving homeschooling. And I actually am a law professor, as you mentioned, and I'm a co-author on a case book that we use in law schools to teach evidence. That's mostly the kinds of nonfiction that I wind up writing. It's all boring legal stuff.
Sounds quite fascinating, though, actually. I suppose it might not be fascinating to read, but it sounds quite fascinating to have that kind of knowledge to be able to write that kind of material. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting issues. I mean, I joke about it, but it is actually very interesting, and especially writing about freedom of religion, where in this country we have such good protections, and yet
Right. It
seems like religion is so often under attack. And so it's nice to be able to write about the First Amendment and how it should protect religion better in different areas.
Definitely. Yeah, that sounds like a fascinating subject for sure, and it's a subject that's much debated in this day and age. So yes, it's kind of interesting that you're able to speak to that. With regard to your writing in Practical Homeschooling magazine, Tony, what is one of the legal issues that you see arising with homeschooling?
You know, yeah, I mean, as a homeschooler, I do get to talk at like homeschooling conferences sometimes, and we were a homeschooling family. We actually started homeschooling when we were in law school. I have 5 kids, by the way. And so we kind of homeschooled most of them on and off throughout their lives. My youngest is now a junior in college, so we aren't homeschooling them anymore. But One of the things that I used to talk about were just some of the, you know, legal mistakes that homeschoolers might make. And of course, one of the problems is always with record keeping and making sure that they are accurately following whatever their state's rules are. But the one that really had, I even wrote a few law review articles about this other topic, is what happens to homeschooling families when the parents get divorced, or if they, you know, maybe they're never even married, and what happens when one of the parents decides they don't want to let the other parent homeschool. And that actually is a very sad legal issue, but it comes up more often than you'd probably like to believe. And so I did write a few articles about, you know, how, you know, the homeschooling parent can maximize their chances to continue homeschooling, especially after like a divorce situation.
Definitely. Or even the situation where one parent dies and the other parent wasn't too keen on the homeschooling idea to begin with. So, yeah, that sounds like a very interesting topic to address.
It's interesting, and it's, I mean, it is kind of sad, though, because a lot of times what happens, I mean, in the typical situation is the mother, as usual, is the main teacher in the family in a lot of these homeschooling families. And
Correct. Then
they get a divorce, and, you know, oftentimes the mother might get, you know, primary custody, but not, you know, nowadays there's a lot more joint custody. And the mother wants to keep homeschooling, and the father's like, well, no, because that kind of cuts me out of the equation. And Sometimes there's spitefulness and that kind of thing going on. And if they go to court as part of their divorce and child custody hearings, and the non-homeschooling parent tries to force them to send the child to public school, or maybe if they can agree on a private school. So it oftentimes ends the homeschooling relationship. So that's a shame.
And another situation that might be addressed too, Tony, is when a child does become in a situation where for whatever reason they do have to transition from homeschooling to public schooling, and how do they handle that? And does that present its own set of challenges for the child?
Yeah, it does. And that's where the parents' record keeping is critical, because the public schools will want to see the types of schooling that have been done, and are they following the different curriculum that maybe the courses that the state requires and that kind of thing.
I'm curious to know too, Tony, and this may differ from state to state, I have no idea, but there are certain issues, as you well know, that are addressed in public school today that are very concerning to parents. That's part of the reason some parents are homeschooling. Is there state legislation that are forcing parents to teach things that they do not particularly feel comfortable or agree with teaching?
Well, thankfully, at this point, we haven't gotten to that yet.
Right.
I, you know, it's something that could happen in the future. You know, there are homeschool lobbying groups like the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, HSLDA, They're probably the biggest one out there and the most influential. They have been very jealously guarding the right of parents to be able to teach their kids as they see fit. It's a fundamental right of parents under the Constitution. But what you do see is states saying things like the kids have to learn subjects that are similar to the public school subjects, such as math, social studies, and science, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen the states yet attempt to tell parents you have to teach, for instance, gender identity, you know, issues or something like that, and something that is attempted at some point in the not-so-distant future. I think there will be some legal battles that some of these homeschool lobbying groups will probably wage, saying that that interferes on the parental right to teach and the parental right to exercise their religion with their kids, especially if there's something that the state wants to teach the kids that is against the parents' conscience and religion.
I even wonder about, what's the big one, evolution versus creationism, for example.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that is a big topic, and especially in some families. And I think homeschoolers are still able to teach what they see fit, but of course, you know, realize that some of those things might be tested in these standardized tests that kids take, and, you know, with the SAT. So, well, I'm not sure how that will play out in scoring, you know, as the kids get older and go off to college and that kind of thing. But right now, yeah, the families still control their teaching in that sense, and I hope that that will stay the case.
Well, good. Yeah, I was just curious about that. So what motivated you to begin writing fiction? You've been doing all this law work and different things of this nature, but what led you over to the fiction side of things?
You know, I have been writing fiction since I was a kid, even though most of my writing was not very good, as many kids' writing is not. You know, as a teenager, I was writing stories, and even as an adult, even when I was in the Air Force, I was trying to write different novels. And so I think I've always been writing fiction. I just never could seem to get to the end of it. It seems like I would sputter out in the middle of a book and lose interest and direction, and I didn't quite know what I was doing at the time. Somewhere in the early 2000s, I joined a writer's guild with a Christian fellowship, other people of faith who also were authors. And I think that was a big turning point for me, because I was able to start realizing more that you can't, I mean, some people might be naturals at writing, but there really is sort of a knack to writing fiction that is different than writing nonfiction. And even though I always considered myself to be a good writer, and I would win awards for like nonfiction, you know, writing, but the reality was I wasn't fully understanding how to translate those skills to fiction writing. So once I started sort of being mentored by some of these other people of faith who also were decent writers, I was able to start, you know, recognizing some of the tools of the trade. And that was about when I got done the first book in my Harwood Mystery series, The Shadow in the Dark. And that really was the first novel that I ever got to completion, and was the start of the series.
What inspired you to write that particular book, and what is a good age range for reading it? Tell us about the Harwood Mysteries. I love that title, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It is a lot of fun. Gosh, there's so much. So the Harwood Mysteries is a series of books that takes place in 12th century England. It tells the ongoing story of a young peasant boy named, he gets named Alexander, and they shorten it to Zan. So Zan, and he has a friend, Lucy, and he, in book one, in Shadow in the Dark, it starts off with his peasant village gets attacked by bandits, and he winds up losing his memory, losing his family, and he's orphaned, and he's raised at this Benedictine abbey by the monks. And there's also like a little there where, you know, some young girls sometimes are dropped off from their family to be cared for, and there's orphan boys at the abbey. And so he winds up being raised at this abbey, and there's all these kind of spooky mysteries that wind up going on that Dan and Lucy have to solve. And so kind of the, you know, in the first one, there's this shadowy figure, like almost like the Grim Reaper or Angel of Death, that is roaming around the abbey grounds at night, and Dan has to solve that. And then in the second book, The Haunted Cathedral, they actually go to a different city called Lincoln, and they have to try to figure out, is this cathedral haunted by the ghost of a little girl? And then the third one is called The Fire of Eden, and that just came out in July of 2020. Then that one, it's kind of like a jewel heist. This precious jewel is stolen that belongs to the family of one of the monks. And Van and Lucy have to try to figure out. And there's this kind of spooky wizard-like magician who's roaming around as one of the suspects. So the books are like mystery adventures, but they actually are also historical fiction. So you asked what inspired me to write it. Started this series when my son was about 12 years old. And we were looking for, you know, hey, it would be great if we had some really good, fast-paced, interesting books for kids, teenagers especially, sort of like Harry Potter was big at the time. And
yes.
You know, we were like, okay, so something that would sort of have a vibe like a Harry Potter series, but that wouldn't have all of the kind of negative messaging and concerns that parents have about the occult and things like that. And so my son and I got to talking, and I was like, well, where would I put a series like this? And how can we put it in a location where we can build in some of the history and some of the spiritual kind of positive themes that I'd like to get into the stories and have it still be organic to the environment. And so that sort of drove me to this idea of placing it in a medieval monastery, because obviously the monks are always surrounded. They're praying seven times a day. They're copying the Bible. One of their main contributions to Western civilization was, you know, copying the scriptures. You know, this is in 12th century England, so it's about 300 years before the Protestant Reformation. And there's
right.
a lot of interesting historical things going on at the time, too. So we, you know, get to explore feudalism and monastic life and the conflict between king and church. And the Crusades are going on in the background between the Second and the Third Crusade at this time. So there's all sorts of really cool stuff. And I thought this would be a great time period to set a book where kids could learn all about all these different things going on, but they could kind of do it in the context of this kind of Harry Potterish spooky mystery, too.
It sounds like an awful lot of research must have went into the writing of those books to write in that time period, Tony.
Yeah, and you asked about the age range. You know,
yes.
So it's really for teenagers, ages 10 and up, really, high school, middle school. And it's put out by Loyola Press, and they sort of are marketing it first to middle schoolers. But I wrote the book so that high schoolers, frankly, I've had college students and a lot of adults who read it who all really enjoy it, because it's not written in a very kiddie way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's accessible to younger kids, but if you're an adult or a college or high school student, it's also very accessible to them. You ask about the research. Yeah, there was a lot of research, and I'm not a historian, although with the law we learn a lot about English history because our legal system derives from the old English common law. In fact, King Henry II, who was the king at the time of my books in the 1180s, he is attributed with starting the jury trials that eventually will become what we know as the jury system.
Oh, okay.
So he started some interesting things that all the way back in the 1100s eventually grew into what we would know as our system today. So, but I'm not a historian. I had to consult with a historian at Catholic University of America. There was a woman named Dr. Jennifer Paxton, and her specialty area was 12th century monastic life in England. So like, she was the perfect person to consult with and to try to help me to get some of the details right, especially in Shadow in the Dark, where I do all of my world building in that first book. And then in 2015, I actually took a trip to the United Kingdom and spent a few weeks kind of by myself traipsing about the countryside and going to all the different places that I was writing about. Of course, this is like 800 years later, but you know, just getting a sense for the locations and Lincoln, England, and Lincoln Cathedral and Lincoln Castle, which are major features in the second book, and they have a really fascinating history. I was able to visit those places and kind of, you know, there's still some of the same structures standing, even going all the way back to the 12th century.
Nice. At this point, Tony, I'm going to take a brief break. This is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Anthony Barone Kolenc, who I refer to as Tony. And Tony is an author. He is also a law professor. He is a speaker and a podcaster. We've been talking a little bit about Tony's history as a nonfiction and a fiction writer, and he has shared with us some information about his Harwood Mystery Series, which is a series for young people. We'll be talking about some other of Tony's talents as we go on with the show. I'd like to inform listeners that if you missed any part of this show or you would like to listen to it again, or hopefully you will refer friends and family to it, you can find this show on archive on my website, which is Patty Sheen, that is spelled PattiSheene.com. On the very first page, you'll find this show. It'll be on there for 3 or 4 weeks. But after that, go to the Blog Talk Radio tab, and you will find a listing of all the shows that we have recorded to date. And under each show, you will find a more information tab. That is where you will be able to get the information you want about Tony as far as how to access his website and any other social media links that he may have, and also links to his books that he has written. So with that, let's get back to our discussion here with Tony. Tony, as you know, here on Step Into the Light, our guests frequently share a time in their lives that was dark or difficult and how they found their way back to the light. Do any of the characters in your novels find their way back to light? And if so, how so?
Yeah, you know, that's actually one of the themes that I really wanted to put into this series. I mean, in some ways, the series is a coming-of-age series for teenagers. But it's asking the kinds of questions that I still ask myself at 52, but that I know teenagers are asking themselves, such as, what does God want me to do with my life? And, why do things happen? Sometimes bad things happen to good people. And kind of some of those universal questions that plague us, you know, how do I pray, and the faith struggles. And so my main character, Zan, as I mentioned in book one, Shadow in the Dark, he is orphaned. And so book one, there's a lot of suffering going on in book one. Zan is really coping with, as he has to try to figure out this kind of spooky mystery about the angel of death that seems to be roaming around the Abbey grounds. He's also thinking of death because he loses his parents. And he's struggling with that question of not only who he is, because he lost his memory too, but he's struggling with, you know, why would God allow these things to happen? And so you could see his kind of faith journey where he's talking to the monk sometimes and they're having these conversations, and one of the nuns, Sister Regina, is a very holy woman. And there's one scene in particular where Zan is talking with Sister Regina and he just doesn't understand. You know, she also lost family when she was young because of a plague that came through her village or something. And they're talking about loss. And he's like, I don't understand, you know, why this happened. Why does God let this happen? What's the answer to this kind of stuff? And she takes the crucifix that she's wearing and she shows him, you know, Jesus on the crucifix and the suffering Christ. He kind of has to struggle with that a little bit, this idea of like, well, yeah, so God understands suffering because he sent his son to suffer for us too. And so they get into those kinds of things. And so Zan is a character who, as he's growing older in each book, you know, each book he ages about a year, you know, he struggles with different things. In the second book, he struggles with forgiveness, and you kind of see his journey because he winds up, they catch one of the bandits who killed his family, and he winds up having to take this journey to Lincoln with that bandit who's going on trial, and one of those trials I mentioned from King Henry, and he has to try to forgive this bandit who seems genuinely remorseful for what he's done, but Zan is struggling with forgiveness. Again, like he's, you know, having these conversations with the monks about how can I forgive somebody like this? You know, he hates this bandit for what he did to his family. And the monk is trying to explain to him, Jesus said you have to love your enemies. And, you know, that's just something, you know, you need to, you know, learn that lesson by living it. And you see sort of Van growing through the book where, you know, he starts to understand, you know, why you need to forgive. And so those are the kinds of little faith journeys that Van goes on, you know, in the series. The other one, that bandit, his name is Carlo, actually, I said he was remorseful. He's somebody who kind of went really bad in his life. You know, he started off as a good kid, and then he went on the Crusades, and he took the wrong path in his life, and he wound up as this bandit. But here he is at the end of his life on his way to prison in the king's dungeon, and, you know, he's recognizing that he needs forgiveness himself from God and coming to terms with, you know, getting back to his faith after such a really bad, you know, life that he lived. And so he's another one. So I do like to put those kinds of themes of redemption in all my stories. I think it's one of the most important themes that we should know as people, as, you know, humans, because of, you know, our own fall and what God did to redeem us.
Well, listening to you describe your stories, Tony, I can very much see where even adults would relate to this kind of a story, because how many times have we as adults in our life said, why did my husband have to die? Why did my mother have to get cancer? Why did I have to lose my job? You know, somebody did me wrong. Somebody did me out of a promotion at work or whatever, and there's the forgiveness issue, and there's the issue of why does God let these things happen? So I can very much see where these books would apply or would appeal to readers of all ages. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I also wanted to tell you, I just love the fact that in your creativity, you give your character Alexander the nickname Zan instead of Alex, which is so common with Alexander. So I really like that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, I mean, it's not a very medieval name, but one of the monks names him after Alexander the Great, and he gives him the whole explanation as to why he names him that, because he doesn't know his name. He lost his memory in book one, and he eventually regains it at the end of the book, but he decides to keep the name that the monks gave him. But it was too long for him. He was like, Alexander, it's just such a big name. And so the monk's like, how about Van, you know?
I like it. Well, Tony, I'm going to ask you, do you have an experience in your own life where you have found your way back to light that you would like to share today? And it doesn't even have to be anything deeply personal, but did you have an experience like in your writing life or in the Air Force or whatever that was particularly difficult for you to get through? And how did you find your way to light?
Yeah, I mean, more times than I would care to admit, I strayed off the path that I should have been on in my life. And it's only by the grace of God and always reaching out to want to kind of bring me back to where I need to go. And, you know, I've always wanted to be on the right path because I, you know, have had this desire to, you know, want to follow God. I think that's what sort of has saved me in these times where I may have gone astray. But, you know, look, we all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, right? And unfortunately, it's something that I think we struggle with throughout our whole lives. And, you know, staying on that path and not being the seed that Jesus, you know, threw on the path that has the world grow up around them and choke your faith and, you know, all the anxieties of the world and the temptations in the world. And so I think I'm sure I'm not alone in saying that too often I've strayed. And I think I credit my faith for, you know, I mean, I've been married to my wife, Lisa, now for 32 years. I don't think that would be possible to have happened, but for God keeping our marriage alive through, you know, difficult times. And, sure, you know, so many, we have five kids and some, several of our kids have different types of health issues, both physical and emotional. And there's just so much that in all of our lives, any family, if you have a lot of kids and siblings and that, I mean, there's always something going wrong and somebody going in a direction they shouldn't be going in. You just have to pray. I just thank God that, you know, no matter how many times I seem to stray from the path, He seems to be able to bring me back on it. And kind of I put that into my stories, too, because that's been my experience in life. You know, I haven't been a perfect saint by any means. And I think that's the real world that we live in is, you know, there are a lot of good people who want to do the right thing. And we all sometimes just get off that path and need to get back into the light at some point. And God calls us, like the prodigal son story, you know, the father is waiting for the son to come home. And so I love that theme of redemption as a theme in my books, because it's hopeful. I can relate to it. And I think it's important for our young people to recognize, because they're going to probably have challenges in their lives where they're going to go off the path at some point. And I'd love for them to be able to think that God is always there and He'll take me back, just like in those stories I used to read as a teenager.
Yes. So tell us about your podcast. I love, again, this title, The Shepherd's Pie.
Yeah, my youngest daughter actually came up with that title. I was debating between the title Raising Faithful Kids, which is really what the podcast is about. It's issues that impact our youth, anything. My little tagline with the podcast is a slice of hope to raise faithful kids. And not because I have any great experience raising faithful kids, but partly because I just want that so much for our youth, and there's just so many ways for our youth to, you know, go off the right path. And so tying into what I was just talking about, it seemed natural to want to have a podcast where we could talk about those kinds of issues. And I was thinking of raising faithful kids, and my daughter was like, that's boring. You need to come up with something cooler than that. And we eventually wound up with the shepherd's pie. And if you see the little symbol, which she also drew for me, she's a very talented artist in her own right. There's a little shepherd's staff, and the symbol of the cross is there on the shepherd's pie, and the P is the little symbol for Christ. So it's, you know, Christ is the good shepherd, and He's calling all of us and our young people to stay on His path, if you will. And how do we as parents and grandparents and youth ministers and pastors, you know, how do we help kids and of any age, whether they're little kids, teenagers, or college age, even, you know, our grown kids when we get to be older and our kids adults, and some of them don't practice the faith, you know, at this point in their lives. And
right.
You know, how do we even handle those issues? So that's sort of a sense of the podcast. I want it to be a hopeful podcast that talk about a wide range of issues involving kids of, you know, in all different areas, whether it's, I've had some episodes on like pro-life issues. I've had episodes on anxiety, on finding common ground. I often have like an author who's usually written either a fiction or a nonfiction book. And, you know, as we're writing these books, we all have something we're trying to communicate. And for instance, the anxiety episode, I had Amanda Cleary Estep, who has written a series of books that the characters are dealing with anxiety, you know, in them. And so we talked about how kids can learn to cope with anxiety through reading fiction where the main characters are kind of struggling with similar issues and things like that. So I really enjoy it, you know, and I think it's a wonderful thing. It allows me to talk to a lot of different people about a lot of different issues that I think are important for dealing with young people today.
And that's the thing that I enjoy about my podcast as well, Tony, is the different people that you meet. And you will find, as you get further into it, it's amazing the people that God leads to you. To me, some of my contacts with people have just been a real God thing. So watch for that, because it's quite fascinating the way He works.
Absolutely. In one of my episodes, it was really amazing. Actually, it's the one with it's your friend, E. Marie.
Yes.
She was the one who referred me to you, actually, for this podcast. I was interviewing her about her Snowflakes Adventure book, which actually her episode is coming out this weekend, and we talk about this beautiful book. I'm sure you've seen it, you know, where it's about the snowflake and it has to learn that, you know, there's a purpose, you know, in our lives that God has for all of us, including, you know, these little snowflakes. But in the middle of her interview, she mentioned she was from New Jersey, and I was like, oh, you know, I grew up in West Paterson, New Jersey. And she stops and she said, Tony, I'm from West Paterson, New Jersey. And neither one of us had ever, no, she lives in Idaho. I'm interviewing her from Texas. And we both grew up in the same tiny little town in New Jersey, at different times, because she moved away, I'm sure, probably when I was still a little kid or something. But I had never met anybody from that part of New Jersey, let alone my hometown, and she hadn't either. And here we are interviewing, you know, in two totally different states, and it's like, what? And talk about like a God moment. I was like, whoa, how crazy is that? It's beautiful. It's what keeps you going.
Yes, yes. So as you did mention, you talked about the focus of your show. So my question for you now is, what do you view as one of the most difficult issues facing youth today? You're doing the podcast. You've raised 5 kids. What are your feelings about some of the most important and difficult issues that kids have today out there?
Well, I think there's just that crisis of faith that, I mean, I think we've always had it. Young people often stray. They go off to college, stray from their faith and that kind of thing. But, you know, it seems like nowadays more and more, it's just so difficult. There's such a, you know, everything is bombarding an attack on the faith everywhere they go. It's trying to tear down the church and Christians especially. And I think that's one of the reasons, A, why I have this podcast, but B, why I write the Harwood Mysteries, is because I feel like there needs to be good literature out there. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but this will give me a good opportunity to do it anyway. The Harwood Mysteries has already won 7 different book awards from both secular, religious, Catholic, Christian, different organizations that give out these awards. I feel so thankful and blessed about that. But I wanted to write a series that was going to be high quality, that would also be very entertaining for kids. And that's why I really was looking at what J.K. Rowling did with Harry Potter and saying, okay, well, she's onto something here. This is something that kids really are in tune with. And it's not like, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful literature classics, but, you know, young people, they don't have the patience for those classics anymore. You know, there's like a whole different kind of writing right now. Yes. And I was like, you know, I want to be able to write a series that is going to be high quality, but will also really engage kids so that they, you know, anything we can do to reach out to them, you don't know what kind of seeds that we're going to be able to plant and how God can water those seeds as the kids get older. And so to me, the most difficult issue facing kids today right now is just that they're bombarded on all sides, you know, with the internet and with social media and everywhere. It's distraction, 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 and it's almost always something trying to tear them away from their faith and just peace and, you know, finding their center in God. And I think anything that we can do to help try to get them back anywhere towards that center is worth doing. That's kind of why I do the podcast.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, Tony. And the problem I have is I don't know, how do you direct kids to that kind of reading, though? How do you draw the kids in? How do you make them aware of it? Because there's so much.
Yeah, well, those are all great questions. A lot of times it's the parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles who are buying gifts and giving them to the kids and realizing, like, hey, this is something that my grandson would really love, and he won't even necessarily realize like this has got, you know, these religious themes, because he'll just think it's a great story and it will really, you know, I mean, think about it. Jesus taught in parables. I mean, that's kind of what we do with our writing, and it takes word of mouth, though. You're right. There's so many competing books, and so much of it is garbage, and so much. So we have to, I think, support Pure Flix and some of these other Christian-based movie production companies and Christian bookstores. I mean, we need to keep these industries going, because otherwise, where are kids going to even know that these things exist? And so for kids, it has to go through parents and grandparents and teachers and homeschoolers and that kind of thing. And yeah, I don't know. I think word of mouth and going on wonderful podcasts like your podcast.
Well, I wanted to mention also, I'd love to have you on my blog, by the way, getting back to Snowflake's adventure with E. Marie. Just kind of a little pitch here for her. Her book is featured on my blog on Patty's Porch. So I just thought I would throw that in. And if you would come on my blog and would like to do a giveaway, then welcome.
Absolutely.
About that. It's right on my website.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Anyway,
thank you.
And, you know, in recognition of E. Marie, since she's the one that connected us, I thought I would give a pitch for her story here on this podcast. And I just love her little story where she talks about Molly the snowflake, and Molly is so scared to leave heaven because she knows she's going to melt, and to her that means it's the end of her life, and God explains how he has a purpose for her. It's a really cool little story. So anyway, not the subject of your story, but
no, hey, look, you got authors helping authors, right?
That's exactly what we talk about.
If I didn't have other, you know, people of faith who are authors who were willing to work with me and mentor me and, you know, network with me, you know, I wouldn't be getting anywhere. So I'm really thankful for that.
One last question, Tony. What can writers such as you do to encourage our youth toward a faith-based life? Is there anything else you have in mind besides what we've already discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely the heart of it, this idea of, and you can't preach at kids. I mean, I guess that's where I would end it with. You really just can't preach to kids today, if you ever could preach at any day to kids. But if you think about some of the people who've had great influence on youth, even holy people who have, you know, I went to a Salesian high school in Paterson, New Jersey, and the high school, the Salesian order is a Catholic order founded from John Bosco, St. John Bosco. He's an Italian priest back in the 1800s or something. And he used to work with youth, and he would just get out in the streets, play games in the street, kick the ball around. I mean, like, you have to get to where the kids are at and show them that you're not there to just try to preach at them. You're there to, you know, let them live their lives and show them that there is another way, you know, like he was dealing with a lot of street kids and showing them that there's another way. But, and so that's why I really think in any of our writing for youth or movies for youth, the more that we can show that to them in a way that's not preachy, that's more organic to the story, I think the better chance we have, at least, of planting the seeds and keeping those seeds there when, I mean, it's not up to us, right? At the end of the day, we pray and the Holy Spirit will work, and all we can hope is that maybe we helped plant a seed or two that eventually grew into something.
I agree with you, Tony. Well, this interview has been fascinating and wonderful. I have so enjoyed the time that we've had to spend together. I want to thank you so very much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for what you're doing, too. I know it's a lot of work, and sometimes it might feel like a thankless ministry if you don't always see all the fruits, but just having people out there like you who are, you know, doing these shows and highlighting these things, I think it's really important.
Well, congratulations to you, Tony. I see your show is fairly new. You've got about, 12, 15 episodes on there. So you're well on your way, and I would like to wish you the very best in your writing and your podcasting and your speaking ministry, and may God continue to bless you in reaching young people and their parents and people like me, grandparents.
Yes, and by the way, if anybody is interested in any of these things we've been talking about, whether it's the books or the Shepherd's Pie, where all my episodes are, everything can be accessed through my website, antonykolenk.com. That's AntonyKolenc.com. And I have links to everything on there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that information, Tony. And again, you have a wonderful day and God bless you.
God bless you too. Thank you.
In closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheen.com. That's PattySheene.com. Click on the Blog Talk Radio tab. There you will find a link to this show and all the shows we have recorded to date. And under each show, you will find a more information tab where you can find the link to Tony's website and his other social media and also his books. Thank you for spending time with us today. Until next time, God bless.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a